Hi, I'm Marty, the vegan charter pilot, or on Twitter at VeganPilotMarty. Here in New York City, where I live, and a stone's throw away from Brooklyn, where I was born. I'm also of Marty's Flying Vegan Review, where I blog about the vegan restaurants I visit all over the world. You can find my blog, strangely enough, at Marty'sFlyingVeganReview.com. And you're listening to Coexisting with Non-Human Animals.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Vegetarian.
Vegan.
Yeah,
well. Let's get it right.
You used the word animals, but I suppose what you should have said is non-human animals. If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself, then make a
change. Hello and welcome to episode 79 of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals, Marty's Flying Vegan Review. And joining me today is my friend Marty of, you may have heard of this before, Marty's Flying Vegan Review, Marty'sFlyingVeganReview.com, a world-class vegan and pilot who blogs his adventures flying across America, visiting vegan restaurants, and basically showing off that, unlike myself, Marty has easy access to vegan restaurants and a plane. How are you today, Marty?
I'm doing great, Jordan. Thanks. I wish it was my plane, and I wish I could go where I wanted when I wanted. But that is part of the adventure, is never knowing where I'm going to end up, and being a vegan, finding a range of restaurants from the top end restaurants to going to a supermarket and seeing what I can scrounge up for dinner.
Well, I'm sure if you filled it up with, I was going to joke and say petrol, avgas, you know, I'm sure you could make it all the way to New Zealand, maybe, with a stop in Singapore. Well, there's going to be quite a few hops, I expect.
But, I looked it up. It would be a 21-hour flight for me, so we would have to land for fuel somewhere off the Pacific coast of California.
Marty, could you please tell us how you became vegan and how you decided to start your wonderful blog?
Sure. I was a vegetarian for many years. What the story is that I was, I used to smoke a lot of cigarettes, and I was looking for something to balance that out. And as you know, the only thing you can do to balance out smoking cigarettes for your health is to quit. but I refused to believe that. So I was talking to a cousin of mine one day who had a lot of health issues, and he said he became a vegetarian, and his fallback was fish, and he felt wonderful. So I said, aha, light bulb going off in head, I'm going to be a vegetarian. So I gave up all of my meat and chicken. I didn't give up fish because that was his fallback. It was going to be mine, and I traded those in for fried cheese and Doritos. And as you well know, you can be a very unhealthy vegetarian / vegan. It's easier to be an unhealthy vegetarian because you can keep the cheese and you can keep certain other things. Anyway, the reason that I kept fish and seafood, and I know some people say this is specious of me, and it probably is, but when I was a kid, 8 years old, I was working on the boats in Sheepshead Bay in Brooklyn, and I have, I guess, less empathy, less pathos for any species that eats its own. And once again, I know this is specious. Anyway, that was one of my fallbacks, my backups. I'd be on the road, and it would be a lot easier to get the fried shrimp than it would be to actually inquire about vegan food on a menu in a restaurant. Once again, never know where I was going to end up for the night. These were some of the challenges that I had. This was a lot of years ago. I was a vegetarian for 15, 18 years. And sometimes I ate fish, sometimes I ate cheese, sometimes I ate eggs, sometimes I gave it up. Fish was my last fallback. I was almost 99% vegan, and every once in a while I would fall back on the fish seafood thing. Although I identified it as a vegan and I would say I was a vegan, I would still fall back on that fish. I had a very interesting email exchange with somebody named Vance, who's also got a podcast, VegCast, and he basically said, you're not a vegan unless you're a vegan. Which I didn't understand at the time. And now that I'm, this summer I'll be a vegan for 2 years, I understand, because I will say to people in a restaurant, I'll say to the wait staff, I'm a vegan, and they'll say, oh, okay, so you can't have the, you can have the fish, but no wheat products, right? You can't have pasta. And I see how confusing this can be to people who are not vegan. And what one of the things that I am now in total clarity with what Vance was saying is, you're not vegan unless you're vegan.
Well, I have to jump in about something you said before, Sheep's Head Bay, and yeah, I have heard that before, but like, what is it, Fishkill and Catskill? There's even, is it a Catskill, well, the Catskill Animal Sanctuary? Like, what's going on with your part of the world, my friend Marty? Like, yeah, it's just bizarre names around there.
As long as it has death and violence in it, we're happy campers. Catskill Mountains are way upstate. They were named, I think, in the 1700s. I think Washington Irving in the Tale of the Headless Horseman was in the Catskill Mountains. So it was a little before my time. Sheep's head was a kind of fish that's now extinct in Brooklyn. And that's what that bay was named for. Used to, my dad told me stories of they would fish off the piers and catch them all the time. But of course, we managed to fish them out too. Let's see, what was the other kill? Brooklyn, someplace in Brooklyn you mentioned?
Gravesend? Fishkill, Catskill? I'm not sure.
Yeah, Fishkill's upstate too. But we have a place in Brooklyn called Gravesend. So if you don't make it through all of those locales, you end up in Gravesend, I suppose.
Oh, goodness, because, yeah, you mentioned death. I mean, here in New Zealand, we have things like, you know, Daffodil Bay, names like that. you guys got death-named bays. It's kind of crazy, but you're a pilot, Marty. Growing up, I loved the Back to the Future movies. The first two were great, and I'm not much of a fan of the last one, you know, the Wild West and all that, way back in the boring past, steam trains mm-hmm. and revolvers. It's not quite the same as flying DeLoreans and pitbull hoverboards supposedly made by Mattel. Marty, would you ever consider changing your name to Marty McFly?
What? You're George McFly.
Yeah, who are you?
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think McFly, think.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite movies, the first one. The second one was okay. I don't even think I saw the third one. The first one was just epic.
The third one's pretty bad, yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
Roughly how many American cities do you frequently visit, Marty? And what cities would have the best vegan food that you know of?
Well, my schedule is varied. I work for a charter company, so I literally never know where I'm going to be spending the night and what time I'm going to get there, and whether I'll have transportation, whether I have a car, or do I have to eat in a hotel. I usually carry a cooler with me with some basics. I seem to not be able to get my day going without a cup of coffee with soy creamer. So you carry one of those. I carry some salad dressing so that I can order greens anywhere I am and know that my dressing is going to be vegan without doing the 20-question vegan dance that I'm sure you're very familiar with. So in answer to your question, I don't know where I'm going to be on a regular basis. I found amazing vegan things where I least expected it. And in the middle of the country, Lawton, Oklahoma, has an amazing health food store with all kinds of vegan prepared foods. And I don't want to really get into the debate about processed foods versus whole food, raw food, because when you travel, once again, you do the best you can. And having a couple of prepared vegan patties or some vegan chickenish kind of thing, and carrying some processed bread rolls with you. Sometimes that's all you have to eat in a place when you get in at 11 o'clock at night and you're starving. As far as the cities that I found amazing food in, Millennium in San Francisco is one of my favorites. I was just on vacation in Los Angeles. I ate at Seeds Bistro, which could possibly have been one of the best meals I've had in my life. And New York, of course, we've got every range of restaurant from the plastic countered pizzeria to Candle 79 and Blossom. I love to find little holes in the wall with spectacular food.
Little holes in the wall with spectacular food? Well, gee, I think I know an example of that. Invercargill's one and only leading vegan restaurant.
We've just had a wonderful Invercargill Vegan Society potluck, and we had all kinds of wonderful food, and one of the guests here today was Natalie. And how are you today, Natalie?
Good, thank you.
And I'm glad you could make it. I think this is the first time you've been able to make it.
Yeah, it is.
And what did you make today?
I attempted to make some sushi.
Oh, it turned out wonderful.
Some focaccia bread.
And is that the same focaccia bread we have on our website?
Yes, it is. Actually.
And so everyone at home can make it as well?
Yes, they can.
I think it turned out wonderful. And Dan's been for most of these, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what did you make today?
I made a green curry and cumin flavour rice.
And it turned out well, and we're glad that you came back from Auckland and Sydney, right?
Yeah.
And we hear that you brought an interesting drink all the way from...
IKEA!
So it's exciting for us, all the way from Sydney, right?
Yeah.
And also, another regular is Russell, and we sometimes, some of us, get jealous of Russell's cooking ability. And what did you make today, Russell?
I made a little modest lasagna.
Little? How long did it take?
It only took, you know, an average of about 4 to 5 hours making the individual components, but...
Could you go through some of those, the cashews?
A cashew nut, cheese, and also a tofu ricotta, oven roasted pumpkin, and capsicum, and an Italian whole tomato sauce.
Oh, well, it smells absolutely wonderful, and it tasted even better. Thank you, Russell. And also, thank you for making me look bad in the fun run.
No way, not at all.
And we also had a special guest today, and this first time coming, and someone that's always keen to tell me who to vote for, and it's wonderful. Would you like to tell us about yourself, Dave?
Oh, hi, Jordan. I'm Dave Kennedy, and I stood for the Greens in the last election, and... I'm also involved with the farmers market in Invercargill too. I'm on the committee for that. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm. And your partner also managed to come. And what did you make tonight?
I just made a lentil curry and brought along a tomato salad.
Oh, and it turned out wonderful. And we hope you can make it for future monthly events.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
And the overwhelming reviews of this restaurant? Wonderful.
There are two places in Miami. One is called Hakem's Vegetarian Restaurant by Hakem, and there is a Vegetarian Paradise, I think, in Miramar, Florida. And these are little tiny places with unbelievable, delicious, varied vegan food.
So how did you decide to get into the aviation industry as well?
That was a dream when I was a kid. I had a cousin who lived in Florida, and when I was a little boy, my parents would take me to what was then Idlewild Airport, now John F. Kennedy, JFK, and I was just enthralled by the ability to turn money into noise, which is what I also call my profession today. Just the airplanes, and I was a little boy. I was like, wow, this is great. You get to take these big machines into the air and actually decide where to put them back down on the ground. That's fantastic. Plus, did you see the movie Catch Me If You Can?
Yes.
Well, back in the day, there was a different sort of respect for pilots that we've seen the industry change over the years. But, being a pilot was pretty up there when I was a kid. It was, it was a different world back then. So that was it was always a dream of mine.
Well, what model of plane is your daily driver, as we say?
I've in the past I've worked for, I think it's been 6 airlines, some people carriers, some freight carriers, and I used to fly DC-9s and MD-80s, and now I fly a small corporate jet called a Hawker, which has 8 seats. Of course, they're not the seats that you and I sit on when we travel. They're like big captain's chairs and the couch in the back and... And
how fast could you crank that thing up to, Marty?
Well, we can go, depending on the mission profile, we can go almost as fast as the airlines. But being that fuel is the most expensive part of flying these days, we tend to pull it back a little bit and balance the speed that we can get with the fuel savings that we can affect at a slower speed.
Okay, because I wanted to use that as a build-up, because I've got a joke. I'm quite interested in sort of the Cold War era planes, and there's a joke about the SR-71 Blackbird, the fastest plane publicly known, of course. And this excerpt is included in the book Sled Driver, and it's a great book, and I've always wanted to get a copy of it, but it's often out of print, and when it is in print, it's something like $600 American to get a copy of it new, and it's signed by the author and all that, but it's, you know, hundreds of dollars for a dead tree is a bit weird to me. One day high above Arizona, we were monitoring the radio traffic of all the mortal airplanes below us. First, a Cessna pilot asked the air traffic controllers to check his ground speed. 90 knots, said ATC, about 166 kilometers per hour for us metric people, you know, who also don't fly planes. A twin-engine Bonanza soon made the same request. 120 on the ground, was the reply, about 222 kilometers per hour. To our surprise, a Navy F-18 came over the radio with a ground speed check. I knew exactly what he was doing. Of course, he had a ground speed indicator in his cockpit, but he wanted to let all the bug smashers in the valley know what real speed was. Dusty 52, we show you at 620 on the ground. ATC responded, about 1,100 kilometers per hour, which is up near the speed of sound. The situation was too ripe. I heard the click of Walter's mic and the mic button in the rear seat. In his most innocent voice, Walter started the controller by asking for a ground speed check from 81,000 feet. Clearly above controlled airspace, yeah, a little bit. In a cool, professional voice, the controller replied, Aspen 20, I show you at 1982 knots on the ground, or would you say 1,982 knots on the ground? We did not hear another transmission on that frequency all the way to the coast. And yeah, I had to work that out for myself a while ago, and that's over 3,600 kilometers per hour, which is actually faster than any announced speed of the Blackbird I've seen anywhere else, but not by much, and they're flying pretty damn high up. So I just wanted to know, have you heard that one before, Marty?
I've heard the one about the SR-71 calling on the radio, descending to flight level 500, which is 50,000 feet, which is the top of controlled airspace. It was actually the transmission confused the controllers, because he said, say altitude climbing to, and he was actually descending down to 50,000 feet. But I think at 1900, that sounds like three times the speed of sound plus.
Yeah, Mach 3.5 is its supposed thing, and the engines can do even faster, but it would tear the airframe apart. But yeah, I love reading everything about that plane, and one day, if I ever get to visit your wonderful country, I actually want to visit all the museums to do with aviation and space the most. And is it the Intrepid, the boat in New York City? It's aircraft carrier, and it's A12, or I don't think it's the actual Blackbird, but it's the it's an earlier version of it. But there's one of those. There's all kinds of amazing planes on there. A Concorde. I hope to visit. So apart from
River. We just pull them out of the river and put them on the boat.
Yeah. You're pretty good at doing that, I hear.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I was in sim training not too long ago, and we had some extra time, and they asked me if I wanted to reenact the Sullenberger fight. The simulator doesn't do a terrible job, but it's sort of funny to land in the river. But you can, and of course the glide from my plane is a little bit different than his. But it's sort of interesting to follow his track and see what he saw when he saw it, and make the decision when he decided that the river was the best option. Just a little bit more, he would have been closer to the Intrepid.
So apart from the sheer joy of flying like a bird, what is the best part about being a professional pilot?
Coming home.
It's like the kid that says, what's the best thing about school? Lunch.
Yeah, that's it. No, you know, it's a great job. I love what I do. Depending on my schedule, sometimes I'm away for 15 days at a time. It's a long time to be away from home, but then again, I get a whole bunch of time at home. So there's those trade-offs. The sheer joy of flying, you know, that's sort of besides that, everything else about the job pales. I do get to meet some interesting people, some famous people. I get to see some really interesting places that I would not have seen before. I got to fly one of my planes to Europe and spend 2 weeks in Italy. Mm. I've been to Central America. I haven't been to South America yet. The Caribbean is a common destination for us. Sometimes I get to spend a few days there. Sometimes I just drop the people off, shut the door, and I take off and come home. So it all depends on the trip, on the mission, on the economics of how the company that I'm working for happens to build the trip out. Certainly things above my pay grade, but I do get to see a lot of places. And, it's always, to me, whenever I get to a place, that my question is, can I find a vegan place? Can I step up to the challenge? Do I have the time? Do I have the, odds are it's not going to be a vegan place across the street from me, which is another vegan challenge, is to find vegan food at a conventional mainstream restaurant. Is there something in this city, in this town that I can get to that I can blog about? I think that not to get away from the sheer joy of flying, but these are all things I like about the job, is that I can continue to be a spokesperson, an advocate for how easy, how not hard, what you have to do to live a vegan life. And I think that my situation is possibly the most difficult, not knowing where you're going to be and when and what's going to be available. If you travel, you can pretty much plan that out. I really can't. So if I can live a vegan life on the road, then I sort of feel as though you ain't got no excuse, buddy.
Well, I think you're doing a great job about being an ambassador to veganism. And I thought I've been wanting to interview you for a long time, Marty, just because I think it's a great job being a pilot, being a vegan. I like your blog. I like seeing all your photos as you show off all the great vegan restaurants you guys have. And we don't have that many of them in the South Island of New Zealand. There's only really one that there's a few in Christchurch, but some of them are shut down. Christchurch, where the earthquake hit, so a couple of those got shut down. There's at least one here that I know in the whole South Island of New Zealand, Circadian Rhythm, which is Dunedin. That's a few hundred kilometres north of me. And it's great because at the National Animal Rights Conference earlier last year. There was meant to be a vegan pilot who was going to speak, and that was one of his things on his bio, that he was a pilot. And I thought, oh, that's quite interesting. And he was the one guy that didn't show up. And I thought, those vegan pilots are real jerks, say they're going to show up and talk, and, it's going to be great to listen to them. And, they really let down the side, and it's great to have a great vegan pilot ambassador like yourself, Marty, to really pick up, the slack.
Well, yeah, thank you for that. I have been listening to your show for quite some time. I have to admit that sometimes I can't understand your accent, but I find it very, very soothing to listen to. I so appreciate your sense of sarcasm and quippiness. And I think that starting the Invercargill Vegan Society with a roster of one and growing it tenfold, or is it 20-fold now?
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. It's grown tenfold, right?
Okay, yeah, it's grown tenfold since you started it, and my hat's off to you for doing that. I think that vegan outreach, you probably have the ability to change more people's minds than I do, because you have a totally blank canvas there. And each one of you who is a member of the society gets to amplify their input into your part of the world. I also listen to NZ Vegan podcast. And I know that there's a strong movement in New Zealand towards veganism and making veganism people more aware of it. And my hat's off to you. I love your work, and thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And about, I'm sure a lot of people laughed when you said that you can't understand my accent, and that's the aim of the game. so
I'm pretty sure.
Listen here, buddy. Listen here.
Yeah, I joked before about Marty, sort of like when I heard his voice, I'm like, whoa, he's like, hey, I'm walking here, kind of thing, you know, like carries a baseball bat in the car, and if someone sort of cuts him off at the traffic lights, he sort of gets out and busts up the, what is it, smash out the tail light first, like the cops do or whatever. You know, the NYPD there.
Yeah, I broke a bat. I have to carry a 3-cell mag light now.
Yeah, it's great, but I have an idea in a future question. I've got a couple more questions coming up, and one of those is a great way that you can spread veganism in your area. But I wanted to ask, let's say you were flying commercial in the United States, Marty, and so you don't get to fly the plane, unfortunately. Do you think that the major U.S. airlines offer good options for vegan food?
I really haven't had the option to test that question out. I know that they have or had been moving in that direction, and you can sort of order a vegetarian, dairy-free meal. Some of the airlines had that option. Now they are selling food on board the flight more than allowing you to order food. Even the coast-to-coast flights, I haven't been on any longer flights where food is provided to you as part of the ticket. And, you know, I mean, airlines go through cycles of their catering, and you know, first it's a bag of peanuts, and you know, 2 years later it's you know, a 6-course meal, and then they say, well, they're losing money, so then they eliminate all the food and go back to the peanuts. I just found out today that some peanut producers use gelatin to coat the peanuts to keep the salt on the peanuts, and I am like, I'll talk about the definition of the word ubiquitous. My God, it's like, do you have to use it everywhere? Do you have to use it everywhere? Anyway, coming back to your question, what I have found in the airports, Jordan, is that more and more places, and I just put up a blog about this in LaGuardia, which is the other New York City airport. All right, Newark too, for those of you in Jersey, no problem. There's a restaurant, it's not even a restaurant, it's just a oh, what's it going to be? They sell newspapers and candy and prepackaged food. They have started to carry vegan options, dumplings and pad thai, vegetarian pad thai, vegan pad thai. In Chicago at O'Hare, I got seitan sandwiches from well, there were two companies in Chicago that were making it. And the names escape me right now, but that's on the website. If you just do a search for SIBO or Chicago, C-I-B-O. And my hat's off to them, because apparently philosophy of if you build it, they will come is really true, because they wouldn't have this stuff if they weren't selling it.
It's definitely good to see it getting out there, because I wanted to mention the last time I was lucky enough to be on a plane, I saw Air New Zealand, national carrier, and they offered special vegan options for longer flights, and one of the vegan options has a muesli bar with honey inside, and yeah, I sent them a polite little note about that. I think it's a good thing to always send polite little notes about things, to pay attention and to get... well, just to make it clear, I mean, it's a bit weird if you have to sort of jump through hoops to get the vegan option, then it's sort of got, oh, this one's got dairy in it, this one's got honey in it, this one, you know, lots of little things. And an muesli bar with honey is kind of an easy thing to get a muesli bar without honey if that's what they want to offer. So it's a bit better than peanuts, but yeah, it would be nice if the peanuts didn't have gelatin in them, and it would be nice if the muesli bar didn't have honey on it. So,
well,
I think
this is the problem when there are people who say, I'm vegan, oh, but the honey's okay. And that's, you know, if somebody asks in the catering department of Air New Zealand, let's put a vegan option out there, and somebody says, what's that? And somebody else comes up with the answer that says, oh, but honey's okay. And you and I both know there are vegans out there that say, well, honey's okay. It's no big deal. And that's not vegan. I think we have to acknowledge that they do the best, and a polite note is exactly the way to go, because there have been times that I have just absolutely lost it in restaurants.
You got the 3-cell mag light out, right?
I went to the car to get it. I'll give you an example, and it's the change that you want to see. There's a restaurant here in New York City. There's a few of them called Blockheads, and it's a Mexican restaurant. And they offer tofu burritos and soy dairy-free cheese and dairy-free sour cream. The training program is such that the servers don't make the connection. And we also probably confuse the heck out of them when somebody says, and my wife does this all the time, she'll order a chicken burrito with soy cheese. And then I say, and I'm a vegan, so don't let me order anything with any animal products in it. And then she comes in and kind of mixes her order, which I'm glad she didn't order the regular cheese. I'm working on the chicken thing with her. She's already given up beef, and that I don't know whether that's because I've been so annoying she had to do something, or you know she realized that that's not doing her any good. But people who mix their orders like that send the servers different messages, and then people will say, just for convenience, I'm vegan, but I want regular cheese on that. You know, make that a vegan burrito, but put regular cheese on it. And so then the definition of who we are and what we're about becomes a mixed dietary message instead of a lifestyle that we have chosen to live, or a life that we've chosen to live. And they served me actual chicken in a burrito. And that just, I mean, I just, at that point, I flipped out, and it was just like, I hadn't eaten chicken in 18 years. So it was, anyway, I wrote, I blogged about it, and I wrote to the owner, and they have since changed their menus, and they have actually put down, they said that they train their staff differently, but there's a little section that said vegetarians and vegans, here's what you can eat. You can have the brown rice, the regular rice, it's not made with chicken stock. Don't order the barbecue sauce because it has honey in it. And so they really redid their menu. I think they went about halfway as far as they could have, but it's still a welcome change. And that's the only way that we're going to be effective in getting places to offer more vegan options. And, I'm sure you feel the same way. I would much rather go to a place that is a vegan restaurant than go to a place that I know has vegan options, because there's the room for mistakes in the second place. And they will be made, and you have to deal with it. You have to make up your mind that you're not going to explode and hit the roof. You have to make up your mind that you really are an ambassador for veganism. You have to make up your mind to ask yourself, was this an intentional mess up of your order, or was it truly a mistake, or was it people who didn't care? And I think that the way the error was made has to reflect how you react to it. And don't forget that the bottom line is to make a change in the world. It's going to be, I think it's going to be generations until we see a substantial vegan world. I hope my grandkids live in a vegan world. I would just like to imagine that in the next generation or two that we're up to 30% vegan, and that it's not such a strange thing when you go into a restaurant. It's not such an unusual request. It's not, oh, but you eat chicken, right? That people really are versed in this. And that's what keeps me going, is that we can close our eyes and imagine a world with more compassion and less killing and less cruelty, and we don't have to look at people who think that finding 6 more inches in a chicken cage is a victory.
Well, yeah, I think that's very well said, Marty. And you know, if there's ever some kind of mix-up or anything, especially if you're wearing your pilot's uniform, you know, once I send you an Invercargill Vegan Society badge, you can keep that in your wallet, and you can kind of like flick your wallet out and show them the badge and say, you know, hey, I'm with the Invercargill Vegan Society, and I'm going to arrest you and put you in the vegan, the vegan police, the vegan prison, and everything. But yeah, we should always pay attention, even when we do order the vegan option. Theveganoption.org, by the way. Marty, for the Invercargill Vegan Society, we plan to visit local Invercargill restaurants and try all the vegan options we can find, and that's theveganoption.org as well. I'm trying to give Diane and Ian some plugs. adding photos and short reviews to our website, and it's going to be something like, you know, hey, if you're in Invercargill, try Bombay Palace, or next time you're at Hell Pizza, order the Sinister, an all-vegan pizza. And that's featured at a national pizza chain, which I think is pretty cool. Hell Pizza are actually global now. They came from the North Island of New Zealand up in Wellington Way and our capital, and they're now in India, Ireland, Australia, Canada, but for some reason they're not yet in America. You know, the whole theme is Satan and devils, and they send out branded condoms advertising their exceedingly non-vegan pizza, which is called The Lust, and they've got pens which look like syringes filled with blood, and they hand them out to kids every now and then by accident. And yeah, I've got no idea why they haven't taken America by storm yet. So would you say that most American cities you visit have vegan restaurants available, or do you think there's enough examples of vegan food in the non-vegan restaurants?
I think, Jordan, that you have to sometimes be creative. You can go into a restaurant. There are tons of websites with information where you can look up a restaurant. Like you can look up a Subway, which is a sandwich chain.
Mm-hmm. We got it here.
Okay. And I think one of the dressings is vegan. It's heavy oil, and I prefer not to have that kind of dressing, which is why I carry my own. But you can do the research. People say being a vegan is too hard, and other people say being a vegan is easy. And I think that we really have to balance it out. And sometimes it's really hard, and sometimes it's incredibly easy. If you've ever been to a vegan restaurant, you know the feeling comes over you. It's just like a feeling of,
if you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it.
If you've ever been to a vegan restaurant, you know the feeling comes over you. It's just like a feeling of, I'm home now. I don't have to ask the stupid questions anymore. I don't have to go through the 20 question game of, was the rice cooked in chicken broth? Is there cheese? Is there Parmesan cheese in your tomato sauce? I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Is there gelatin in your peanuts? I mean, you know, the questions. And when you start out, you're gonna make these mistakes. You're going to eat things that are not vegan, and you just have to give yourself an, oh well, that was a learning experience. It's not what I wanted to do, but it happened. Let's not do that again. Let's make sure we add that question to our repertoire and move on. So are there more vegan options out there? Absolutely. And we're also moving away from the grilled vegetable plate for vegans. We're also seeing, I'm seeing a tremendous change in the attitudes of the chefs that I approach in restaurants that are not chain restaurants. Chain restaurants have much less ability to be creative with their food, I found. But I walked into a John Bozeman's Grill in Bozeman, Montana, the middle of ski country, the middle of every restaurant has the bison and elk and caribou, and I don't even know what they have that they were able to catch and kill and put on a grill. And I walked into this restaurant, John Bozeman's Grill, and it was between services, and I saw the chef sitting working on his menu, and I walked in there and I said, I'm a vegan. What can you do for me? And I could see in his eyes that he looked at this not as being a pain in the butt, but as being a challenge. That now he looked at his menu, and they have a taster's plate. It's like a healthy plate with four different dishes on it. And he was like, yeah, we can take the yogurt out of this, and we can put something else in here. And he was working on this in his mind, and that's what a chef whose true culinary calling is looking to do. That's what they do every day. They just don't think of using non-animal ingredients. So when you give them a challenge, I've seen more and more chefs step up to the plate. Turks and Caicos was another example. I don't remember the name of the restaurant, but I kept asking questions. They put some, you know, it was like a pesto dip with bread. And I said, is there cheese in this? And it turned out there wasn't. Apparently they have lactose intolerant guests. And then I ordered this dish and I kept asking questions. And finally the chef shows up and he's about your height. And I'm looking up at the chef. I'm sitting at the table. He's like, "What can I help you with?" I said, "I just want to know what's in the food." He described, and they did put this beautiful plate in front of me. It's also in my blog with pictures of a fried plantain and a portobello mushroom cap, and it was filled with a puree of something else, and it was complex, and it was flavorful, and it was thoughtful, and there were many textures in it. And I've seen chefs step up to the plate to try to do this. Of course, the other side of the coin is, hey, we got a busy service going on. We're trying to get a lot of dinners out. We don't have time to stop in the middle to cater to your needs. So I'm going to suggest that if you're going to a place like that, call ahead and talk to somebody other than the person who answers the phone, unless they're the manager or the chef, and tell them what you're looking for. And if you have to have an extended conversation, I'm looking for more than just some steamed vegetables or some grilled vegetables, what could you do? I've found more and more places have stepped up to the plate and given me something worth writing about rather than just brushing me aside with some gratuitous, simple vegetable dish.
Well, that's great to hear, and here's my question, which is an idea for a way that you could help spread veganism in even more ways, Marty. I'm not sure if you've thought of this one before, so I'm priding myself on being original here. Back in 1981, the South African national rugby team toured New Zealand. There were massive protests about the tour, as at the time, their nation supported racial segregation, which was apartheid. Our whole nation was split on the issue, whether we should break the embargo on sporting contact with South Africa and allow their team to tour New Zealand, or whether, you know, we should stand firm on basic human rights. Well, the tour went ahead with massive protests at every match, and shockingly, we even had police in riot gear hitting and dragging New Zealand citizens, and it was outrageous because even now our police, they don't have weapons on them, and so to see riot shields and batons was something unbelievable. One of the most interesting protest tactics was the hire of a plane, which circled the rugby field. It dropped human rights pamphlets into the crowd, flares, and unfortunately also threw out flower bombs, bags of flour, which could seriously hurt someone.
Change now to quite an unusual feeling of tenseness because there is a light plane circling the ground and dipping in low and dropping things into the crowd. There originally was a series of pamphlets dropped onto the playing field which were cleared away. There were then some flower bombs dropped. And those are the gestures from the crowd as the plane comes over yet again. There's the plane coming in very low over Eden Park. It seems to me to be just above the grandstand height. Flower bombs have landed on the field and are going to be cleared away as the All Black team comes on.
And just to be clear, the All Blacks, that's the name of the New Zealand rugby team, the national rugby team, the All Blacks, and it has nothing to do with the colour of their skin. And yeah, the Springbok team at the time, though, you could say they were all white because they, yeah, it was racially segregated. And so there were no Africans in the Springbok side. And if they were called the All Whites, well, that's the name of New Zealand's national football team, soccer. The All Whites, you know, football, soccer, and the All Blacks, which are
first half,
rugby.
Down on the left-hand end of the ground, there is a stoppage. Smoke bombs have been thrown onto Eden Park at the left-hand end of the field. Smoke bombs, flares, being an attempt to come onto the field. The game will stop. Flower bombs dropping onto the park. Flares dropping as well from... Are they coming from the sky or coming out of the crowd?
Well, I think it's six of one and half dozen the other. Some of the flares have come from the number three stand, but others have been dropped from the plane that's flying round.
Gary Knight was struck by a flower bomb and it knocked him over. He's just got to his feet again, and you can see Gary Knight was struck by a flower bomb dropped from the plane. Now I guess that would be a tremendous thump. I'm sorry to interrupt there, Graham. I saw that happen. This is really unreal. Words can't describe my feelings at this point about this game. You see the field is scarred. There are papers being dropped from the plane in the background. And now a player has been hit by one of the bombs.
Demonstrations had been so successful already at that point. Our way north was already blocked. So we took off. Marks went in and got the plane, did all the paperwork, and everything was legit. Everything was completely legitimate up to that point. And then he brought the plane down to the end of the runway and we loaded up all the boxes of bail bombs. I jumped in and we took off. I had gone to know Marks through the tour and had gotten to trust, and you know, could see where he was coming from. He'd been piloting for some time, so he flew the plane and I was the passenger in the plane. Marks got onto the radio and found the police channel, and we said, we're on our way, you know, you're going to have to put the game off. Then we started flower bombing. And at first it was really hard. I had no idea what I was doing. We would hit the field and I'd drop it, and of course, you know, physics, you know, I didn't think about physics. The things just flew right over the field. They didn't even go in. But then finally, after about 6 or 10 runs, I finally started getting them into the field itself. After that had happened, we just decided we'd head back. We were followed, I think, by a couple of planes and a helicopter. And when we arrived back there were a few squad cars there, and we just landed the plane and got out and was arrested and taken back to the cells.
Marty, let's say out there was someone wanting more listeners to his animal rights show, and he happened to know someone who had access to an airplane, and totally hypothetically, of course, what kind of money would we be talking about to have a few, you know, 100,000 bits of recycled biodegradable paper dropped over major US cities? I mean, it's not like there's some kind of government agency with the ability to track planes, and it's not like they'd have access to fighter jets which might want to have a word with the pilot hired to do such a stunt, right?
Right. Assuming all of those things weren't in place like they are here. You know the thing. If somebody had money and wanted to spend it on vegan advertising, I'm far from an expert in advertising, but there are these little tiny tail draggers that tow banners back and forth along the beaches, and I don't know how effective they are. I don't know what the message that gets to people. There's a group called the AR Zone, and they have interviews and podcasts. And the question is
they
always
sound like
asked.
Great guys.
Yeah, guys and gals and
people
like
this woman included as well, like Barbara DeGrand and Carolyn Bailey. Huh.
Yeah, those sound familiar. for those of your listeners that aren't so familiar, that's Barbara DeGrand and Carolyn Bailey. The question that's always asked is why did
for
you
listeners
go
that aren't, vegan? For listeners that aren't as familiar and that can't understand my accent too, thanks, Al.
The question is always asked of the listeners, why did you go vegan? And I think at some point there was actually a thought that maybe they could, by repeatedly asking the question, we could find a common ground to find out why people went vegan so that we could use that information to talk to people about that specific area. And I think that people go vegan for lots of different reasons. I went vegetarian for my health, I went vegetarian for my health, and I'm vegan for the animals. And not that my health is not important, and not that the environment is not important, but we look at animal rights and compassion, and there's no, everything else is a distant second to that. So you know, why? What would your leaflet say? And
hypothetically,
what,
of course, this no, person no, that I, course. You know, a friend, my friend wants to know.
Yeah, yeah. Yo, I know a guy that knows a guy. It's okay, do it. you know, the dropping of leaflets, assuming you could do it legally, assuming that you lived in a country with laws where the police actually carried guns. But the question still remains. What message do you put on a piece of paper or a brochure to change somebody's mind, to get them thinking about what they eat, to just eat more consciously instead of just going through McDonald's and Burger King drive-thrus mindlessly eating delicious, filling nutritionally void food. The animals aside, environment aside, everything else aside, it's mindless. It's 99 cents, which I don't know, is like 16 pounds, 4 pence where you live. I'm not really sure how that works.
Yeah, the New Zealand dollar. We stole your dollars too. So yeah, about $1.29 New Zealand. We're about 20% below your wonderful, very valuable American dollar.
Everybody steals their money. It's okay. It's the way I grew up. Or perhaps.
I blame that socialist Muslim in charge, personally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We got to get him out of the White House and put somebody that knows what they're doing in, like...
Ron Paul.
Oh, please don't get me started. The question, once again, is what's the vegan message? There's so many pamphlets... Mercy for Animals, Boston Vegetarian Society, Compassion Over Killing, on and on and on, PETA, and they all have a different message. And the question is what's effective and how do you measure that has still not been answered, nor do I think it's something that's going to be answered in the near future. So it's a matter of you and me talking to a person every day. And towards that end, I mean, you mentioned the Vegan Police, and I happen to be wearing a T-shirt from another podcast called The Vegan Police. And it's a picture of an ape opening up a cage, ripping it open, and it says, "Till every cage is empty." And you should be impressed because I read that upside down. Every day when I'm not at work, I wear something that somebody may ask me about, and whether it's a button from an animal sanctuary that says, "My food didn't scream," or a little tofurkey button that says, "This piggy didn't go to market," or a T-shirt or a hat or something, buttons on my knapsack, anything that would cause somebody to ask me any question, to give me an entree into a discussion. That's, unfortunately, we can't do that to 10,000 people at a time, but we're only ourselves, and we can only do this to one person at a time. And judging how they react, I may say you should go vegan, or I may say, have you ever thought about moving towards a more plant-based way of eating? Because to tell you the truth, as Gary Francione says, veganism is the moral baseline. Whatever you agree or disagree with the abolitionist approach, the bottom line is, for me, the veganism is the moral baseline. There's a lot of other baselines too. But how am I going to get this particular person to change and become a vegan is the question that you can only answer while you're watching their reaction to what you're saying. And I've had people talk to me about what I had in my shopping cart online. "Oh, you see, you have a lot of healthy food in there." "Oh, why, yes, I do. And I see you have a lot of stuff that's going to clog up your arteries and kill you before you're 30. How come you're eating like that?" You know, I mean, I'm joking now, but anything that opens up a door to conversation where you can suggest a more compassionate, a healthier, and a more environmentally responsible way of changing their diet. I don't know what the numbers are. There's some number floating around about if you could get everybody to eat one more vegan meal a week. You know, we could. It's the equivalent of taking, you know, 500 billion cars off the road every day. I don't know what the numbers are. And in all honesty, what's the difference what they are? Anytime you can get somebody to eat one more plant-based meal than they would have, you're successful. You're moving in the right direction. I liken it to an ocean liner that's run aground, and you're down there in a scuba suit moving that first grain of sand. It's not going to move the ship off the reef, but it's going to be the beginning of the movement of the ship off the reef. And that's all we can do. One step at a time, one day at a time, whatever we can. That's the way I see my job right now, to try to be the change.
Almost like the change you want to see in the world, huh? Well,
yeah, I was going to say that, but I knew you would.
Well, I've got some other things that you might have thought I will say. You mentioned about a baseline, and veganism is the moral baseline of the movement. I think that's a pretty good sounding baseline, but my favourite baseline of all time is probably still the one in Billie Jean, of course. You know, the you know how much you like.
I knew you would bring up Michael Jackson.
I know how much you like Michael Jackson, right? And especially not especially not Grateful Dead. You're not a fan of them at all, right? And about reading that t-shirt upside down, what? Am I meant to give you bonus points for that, Marty? Because, you know, I'm a New Zealander, and in New Zealand we do everything upside down, this crazy southern hemisphere. No, I think the t-shirt sounds great, Marty, and yeah, I try and do what you do, and I try and wear badges whenever possible, and I got a nice hooded sweatshirt I like from Herbivore Clothing, which is Portland, Oregon, which seems to be the vegan capital of the world, and yeah, yes. I like their badges. I wear them on my overalls, so I'm in my work overalls in my workshop, you know, using power tools all day, and I'm sort of covered in dust and ground metal, and there's smoke and fire sometimes. Well, not so much fire, but smoke. a woman today asked my father, who's up the shop further, he's serving people, is something on fire back there or something? He said, oh no, it's just my son, he's grinding through steel or something. I forget what I was doing. Yeah, you know, it's pretty easy to forget what you're doing a few hours ago. I'm just so excited to be talking with you, Marty. I think I was grinding through steel bed ends at the time. Yeah, it's just great to wear things that advertise veganism, and I've got some bags that have got the address for my podcast on it. And by the way, listeners, it's coexisting.co.nz now, nice and short. And when I walk down the street, I always try and have the bags on the outside, so that, you know, the design
it's
on
wide,
the outside.
Wait. Say that slowly so people
okay.
who are in Brooklyn, where I'm from,
okay.
could understand it. Coexisting.co.nz. Say it again.
coexisting.co.nz. That's .co.nz, or as you people in Brooklyn would say, Z.
Z, yeah, Z. Okay. So so it's .co.nz. Got it.
Or .nz, yeah.
I knew you were going to have the last word.
I should be a nice host, right, and let the guest have the last word, but yeah. Well, okay, I still like my idea about, you know, if I had a friend that wanted to hire someone, you know, the big bucks to throw bits of paper out of a plane, if he had a plane, and if he had a friend that wanted to pay someone to do this, you know, I'm sure we could add some little tinfoil strips or aluminum foil, as some people would say, little, you know, long, thin shreds of that. That would totally work as chaff flares and to deflect any heat-seeking missiles launched, right? And if not, we could always take a huge insurance policy out on the plane, billions of dollars, the week before, and make sure there's a damn good parachute, so we could sue the US government for silencing free speech over regulated airways, something like that. But I think your idea about a banner out the back of a plane sounds pretty damn good too. We have that in New Zealand sometimes. I remember there used to be a pizza company that used to fly around saying, buy Eagle Boys pizza or something. And I'm like, wow, I mean, how much does it cost to have a plane circling Invercargill for a Saturday afternoon? And but okay, maybe it worked. Well, they're bankrupt now. They're out of business. So perhaps it didn't work.
Yeah, maybe it didn't.
Marty, totally unbribed, of course. What is your favorite animal rights show? Coexisting with non-human animals.
There's one that you could find at .co.nz. Jordan, you are one of... I have probably 100 hours of podcasts on my iPhone. And you're one that I'd like to listen to every week. There's a couple of others, Our Hen House, Midwest Vegan Radio, Bob Linden, several others that I find very interesting. There's several that come out of Canada that I think are outstanding. And there's always new ones. There's Go Red, I think it's Erin Red has a podcast. She's a local here. And it seems as though they come and go also. I mean, there's some really fantastic ones that are just not around anymore. And unless you do a search every week, you won't find the new ones. But, there are some that have people who are just yakking away, which there's a time and a place that I like to listen to that. And there's... I can't imagine that actually happening. And then there's some that... have current events and news and things about restaurants, local restaurants, and then of course cooking shows. I mean, if you haven't seen the Tofu Guru, you really I mean, that is one of the smartest, I think, cooking shows. I can't wait for Brittany to get out of school so she doesn't have to study so hard and can put a whole bunch more on or more shows on her tofuguru.net. You're up there, Jordan. You're up there.
So
you're down there.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if I like being down there in that sense, but yeah, I am at the bottom of the world. But I've totally got your favorite podcast, though, right? And by the way, I'm sending you a $20 note in the mail right now.
Absolutely, and I will take some pictures of that Invercargill Vegan Society pin on my hat in my plane, just so that you know that I got it.
Great, and I'll be sure to Photoshop lots of your arm out the window. You know, the planes. You know, you're flying a. What was it doing again? Almost 2,000 knots? Yeah, as you're flying almost 2,000 knots on the plane, you'll be throwing leaflets out the side. Sure, why not? The window's open.
I don't think I could go 2,000 knots if I was going straight down.
You can do anything if you put your mind to it, you know, maybe. At the Invercargill Airport, it had to be extended back in the day because we're kind of at the bottom of the world. I don't know if I've mentioned that. Someone might have told you that. And they had flights to Antarctica going, big giant cargo planes from our runway. And they had to put the JATO rockets on it, which is sort of like a little, they call it like a bottle. Yeah, so that's kind of exciting. So you got these huge, heavy planes, and the only way that they'd really get off the damn runway is if they got extra sort of rocket boosters sort of strapped on the side, a bit of duct tape or whatever. You can do anything you set your mind to. Well, I have to say, Marty, of all the vegan pilots I know who blog their travels of America, sampling from a seemingly endless supply of vegan restaurant banquets, you're absolutely my favorite. Where should we all go to find out more about your blog?
Thanks for that compliment. I truly am astounded by the number of vegan American pilots who blog about their travels that you do know. My blog is at martysflyingveganreview.com.
MartysFlyingVeganReview.com. I'm just making sure I get used to it as well.
Marty's Flying Vegan Review. And on Twitter, I'm Vegan Pilot Marty.
I'm following you, and it's great to see new articles come up. I love looking at the pictures. And I can't thank you enough, Marty. It's great to be in catch up, and that finally I got to hear from a vegan pilot, and you totally didn't, you know, not show up. So thank you for your time, and it's been great talking with you. Take care, have smooth flying ahead of you, and I hope you'll think about all the people who live without easy access to vegan restaurants. You know, the next time you're surrounded by all that wonderful vegan food and friendly staff, and especially the ones my height, and they ask you and they tell you about everything, and if there's gelatin in the peanuts, and if there's honey in the muesli bars. And if you live in America, especially around New York way, you know, the state or the city, either or, it's the same thing, right? It's like New Zealand, it's part of Australia, right? Next time you look up and see a plane, it might well be a vegan flying it. So veganism spreading, and it could be a vegan pilot spreading the message about veganism in a certain podcast by throwing out hundreds of thousands of leaflets out the side as he does 2,000 knots. Why not? Thank you very much for your time, Marty.
Pleasure being here, Jordan. Thanks for the time.
I'd like to thank Marty again for his precious time. You can find his wonderful blog at martysflyingveganreview.com, and it was really wonderful to speak with him. And it's always good to check on his blog, his website, because you see all the wonderful photos of his plane, the food, and Marty's wonderful smiling self. Thank you for listening to Coexisting with Non-Human Animals. You can find the script for this episode, you know, this unscripted episode, whatever, Jordan, keep reading the standard boilerplate, as well as downloads for every episode of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals at www.coexisting.co.nz, although we also accept Z, apparently. If you want to contact me, I'd really love to hear from you. Please send me an email to info@invsoc.org.nz. info@invsoc.org.nz, which is also a Z. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, Jordan Wyatt, WYATT. Thank you for listening.
Away from the notion of animals as things and toward the moral personhood of animals. The choice is ours. If you're not vegan, go vegan. It's easy. It's better for you, it's certainly better for the planet, and most importantly, it's the morally right thing to do.
Look at me! look at me. Up and about. I haven't done this in 20 years.
Oh. Grandpa!
I never thought my life could be anything but catastrophe. But suddenly I begin to see a bit of good luck for me. 'Cause I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden twinkle in my eye. I never had a chance to shine, never a happy song to sing, but suddenly half the world is mine. What an amazing thing, 'cause I've got a golden ticket.
It's ours, Charlie.
I've got a golden sun up in the sky.
Slippers, Charlie.
I never thought I'd see the day when I would face the world to say good morning. Look at the sun. I never thought that I would be slapping the lap of luxury, 'cause I'd have said
it couldn't be done.
But it can be done.
Ooh, the cane, Charlie. Ah. Ah. Here I go. Watch my speed. Oh,
I never dreamed that I would climb over the moon in ecstasy, but nevertheless it's there that I'm shortly about to be. 'Cause I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden chance to make my way. And with a golden ticket, it's a golden day. Good morning! Look at the sun! I'd have said it couldn't be done, but it can be done. I never dreamed that I would climb over the moon in ecstasy, but nevertheless it's there that I'm shortly about to be. 'Cause I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden chance to make my way. And with a golden ticket, it's a golden day.
Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 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 Liftoff.